to four.
Do you have a gardening problem? We can help you with that. A program dedicated to help you grow a better garden, maintain your landscape, grow healthier trees, make that grass look a little bit greener, as well as preserving what you grow. We're here to help you with your gardening problem. You're tuned in to Garden Talk Radio.
You're listening to the most informational packed hour of garden-focused radio in the country and on the internet with your host, husband and wife team, Joey and Holly Baird. This is the Wisconsin Vegetable Gardener Radio Show.
Welcome to the Wisconsin Vegetable Gardener Radio Show. The Wisconsin Vegetable Gardener Radio Show is presented to you by Power Planter Earth Augers, the official digging tool. To find the right size for your digging projects, visit powerplanter.com. Thank you for taking time out of your day to join us to talk gardening for the next hour. Whether you're listening to us on your radio on one of the 16 stations broadcasting our program here in 2020 on an app, through our website, thewisconsinvegetablegardener.com, under the Season 4 tab at the top of the page, podcast replay or in-studio video replay. Thank you very much. I am your host, Joy Baird. Beside me is my wife, co-host, best friend, and gardening partner,
Holly Baird.
This program is for you, about you, to help your garden grow better, to make your trees healthier, to maintain your landscape, make your grass look greener, as well as preserving what you grow indoors and out. You can get a hold of us a couple of ways here. We'll give you the two easiest. You can email us anytime, gardentalkradio@gmail.com. That's gardentalkradio@gmail.com. Or if you want to talk to us, it's toll-free, 1-800-927-SHOW, 1-800-927-SHOW, nationwide, toll-free for you. We got a program for you, as we do every week, a lot of content jammed into an hour. We're going to talk about lessons we've learned in our garden this year. And segment one, segment two, problems that you're dealing with in your garden, as well as our guest is Karen Chapman, author, will be with us. Plus, your garden questions. It all starts right now, Holly. So every time anybody gardens or anytime you do anything in life, you're supposed to learn, whether it's something good, something bad, so it doesn't get repetitive, because what is the definition of insanity?
Doing the same thing over and over again, but expecting different results.
And that only, you know, same thing with our, you know, planting broccoli and cauliflower. Can't do it. Tried it a couple years. Said enough of that. We're going to do something different. So we've learned things in the garden, and we've showed a lot of that information through this program, as well as through our weekly YouTube videos. You can find on our website, thewisconsinvegetablegardener.com. We do about 12 a week. Yeah, that's a lot. That's including the in-studio video, the segments, as well as multiple First Garden, New Gardener series, our 60-second garden tip, as well as our weekly show we do in the garden. So a lot of content we pump out to help people garden, because we show our failures. There's gardeners and radio hosts that do not show their failures. It's one and done. It's always perfect, and that's the way it's going to be. Like, it's a PBS program, and you're limited on time, and that certainly is not the most encouraging method to help people that, hey, I've got all these things, and I've done this for X amount of years, and we've never had a problem.
Right. So with that being said, we learned some things this year in the garden, and one of them definitely is that when you're going to install something like irrigation, you want to make sure that you have all of the parts, you have the correct parts, and you know that those parts are going to work.
Yeah. So with DripWorks.com, a sponsor here on the program, when we got a system, one, we explained to them what our layout was. So we're not going into this blind. They're experts. So we wanted to say, here's what we've got. We've got raised beds. We've got grow bags. We've got some in-ground stuff. What would you recommend? Well, then once they recommended a certain system, then we laid out a plan on a piece of paper. Here's how we're going to install this, and what are the pieces and the parts that we need, from elbows to couplings to fittings, all of that, every little thing possible. So we made one move, and we had all the pieces that we needed, because it's not that fun to purchase part of the product and then have to repurchase it and purchase another piece because you didn't plan ahead. So you want to plan ahead, and we drew it out, and I figured out every little inkling piece And even in that aspect, if I only needed part one of these pieces, I got two because I know that there's a potential of a failure of some sort and I'm going to need to fix it. And we did have a failure in a part of the irrigation system, and I was able to fix it because I got an additional part for that. So that's with anything, whether you're laying out a garden, figuring out how much compost you need, an irrigation system, anything like that, how many can jars, lids you're going to need. You need to figure it out so you make one move and make it count.
Right. So that is definitely something that we had learned. And because especially when you're in the midst of installing it, you just have to think about that kind of stuff.
You don't want to go back and have to try to figure out what to do or what parts to do and then delay the project altogether.
So another one is aggressive weeds. So when we converted to a raised bed, we were like, we're not going to have to deal with weeds. However, there are some aggressive...
Well, now we knew that we would deal with some weeds.
But not a lot. And
right.
We didn't see this, I guess. I don't think we saw that these aggressive thistles were going to happen.
Right.
And
now, disclaimer here, when I'm talking about our garden, and you can look at it in the videos, it kind of looked like a pasture by the end of the year.
Yeah.
It was just thigh-high, waist-high weeds, and the more you fought, the more you lost. Well, when we converted to the raised beds, yes, we do have some weeds in those raised beds because the weeds were very aggressive and they grew through the 10 inches of compost, and also some weeds germinated on the top. But for every, two weeds, we had 1,000 weeds before. Very, very minimal problem to deal with. However, we didn't lay cardboard down in some of the raised beds. It's recommended that you know, some people say, oh, you just put the soil down and compost down. You don't put anything underneath it. Don't need a barrier. Other people swear by 3, 4, 5 layers of newspaper, a couple of layers of cardboard. We did the cardboard in one bed, and we didn't do it in the other beds. And the thistles that were there from previous years and the milkweed pushed right through all that compost. The milkweed we left alone. The thistles we sprayed with the Green Gobbler horticultural grade OMRI listed 20% vinegar, and it did very well. Top burnt it and stressed it out to the point where we didn't have that issue anymore. So we did make that work, and for what little bit of effort we had to put into killing the thistles, it was a small, small price to pay compared to what we have dealt with in the past.
Right, definitely. We just had to get rid of a few thistles. The milkweed, like Joey had said, we just left. But compared to pulling weeds, and then Joey would spend time turning over the soil, pulling weeds out, pre-planting
roots.
Yeah, pulling the roots of the weeds out, and then it seemed like they just got worse.
Right, and this goes into our next item, is we should have built raised beds sooner.
I 100% agree. But I feel like this was a good year because we had a lot of time.
Right.
So
but also now we had some financial, we were financially able to do such. This is not a small investment when it's all said and done.
No, it's not like just getting, you know, maybe
a couple of containers on a porch.
Yeah, yeah, containers on a porch or a couple bags of compost or a couple bags of fertilizer or something. No, this was quite an investment.
Yeah.
And we had to purchase the lumber. Mm-hmm. We had to purchase the compost. And then obviously the nails aren't huge,
no.
But you have to plan for that. You have to, if you do want to put something like a weed barrier down, that is something you want to consider. If you have anything like moles or voles, you might have to put some hardware cloth
uh-huh.
down.
We had 2 4x16 raised beds, 2 foot or 4 foot wide by 16 foot long, 10 inches high. And then we had 3 4 foot wide by 12 foot long beds. And then that equated to compost. That compost, in addition to a pallet raised bed we built, and then going over to your sister's compost went over there because she built 2 4-foot by 6-foot raised beds. And we had the grow bags from Rootmaker. We brought in about 10 and a half yards of compost from our official garden center here in the Milwaukee area, Blue Mills Landscape and Garden Center, to fill everything. And we calculated, and we had a little extra, and that's always a good problem to have when it comes to compost. Hey, I've got X amount more rather than I'm going to be way short. I got to stretch this stuff. So now instead of 10 inches, I got to make it 8 inches, and I've really not benefited myself by topping the beds off the way they need to be. So building the raised beds, obviously financial deal. You got to have the financial capabilities of doing such, but it's well worth the, it's an investment. It's not a one and done type of thing.
Right. It's definitely an investment, but to us, it's worth it, and we will continue to enjoy it for years to come. And that's the big thing, is it's an investment, and that's what you have to keep in mind.
Another thing when it comes to the garden is don't think too hard about where to plant plants. Many people dwell on it, and they do charts and computer programs and apps to figure out the specifics of this, that, and other. And that's great and all, but sometimes I think we dwell too much on, should I really plant the tomato plants here, this row here, what about over here? Put them in the ground. They're going to grow a lot better.
They're going to grow better on the ground. You might want to, like, if you plant a lot of tomatoes like we do, you might want to consider that. But if it's something where it's like, well, these cucumbers aren't doing so well, so maybe I'll just replace them with beans, but should I put beans here, blah, 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 like, just do it. Just plant something. And if your crop fails, you know, we had a rough time with our peas. Sometimes we don't get the
best peas. Started out okay, then they got real bad, and then they got a D minus. The beets didn't do well at all in the big garden. However, at your sister's, they did phenomenal. It's all the same soil.
Right. So we're not really sure what that's about, but
we have garden fails too.
Right. And that's the biggest thing is that you're going to have fails. You're going to have problems. You're going to have, like, my manager at work, he flooded his tomatoes on accident, whatever. So it's going to happen, but you're going to learn, and you're also going to, you can have an option, but you just have to get it in the ground. So if you have a failure, that's fine. You've lived, you've learned, this is what happens.
Make a note
and think about what you might do different next year.
Now, with that said, obviously if you've got tomatoes, they don't go in the shade. I'm talking about it, you know, trying to organize this row here, you're in full sun. Put the stuff in the ground. See, Grandpa always said the on the farm, the seed's going to grow a lot better in the ground than in the bag sitting in the shed waiting for it to be planted. So you want to put it in the ground. And with the raised beds and all the investment that we put into it, we now can actually focus on having fall crops, something that we never have really had great success with in the past for a couple of reasons.
Right. So one reason is because we had too many weeds by the time we were able to plant fall crops. They just took over. We didn't have space for them. And then
irrigation.
Oh yeah, irrigation. We needed to.
And we got great soil.
Yeah, we have great soil. So there's many reasons why we can have fall crops now.
So yeah, so that's some of the things that we have learned in our garden. And we just want to pass on some of that. Some of you may be very aware of all those points. Others of you who are gardening for the very first time this year, we hope that this has helped so you can make fewer mistakes. Our job is to we'll make the mistakes for you so you can be successful the first time. So some of the things that we've learned in our garden.
Thank you for taking time out of your day to listen to our show. This is our 22nd show of 2020. Did you miss last week's show? We talked about glyphosate, questions answered, lesser known landfill facts, and our guest was author Charles Melke. You can listen to that show by going to your favorite podcast platform and searching the Wisconsin Vegetable Gardener podcast, or we will make it even easier to find them. Send us an email to gardentalkradio@gmail.com, and in the subject line put show 21, and we will send you the link. We will be right back. Do not go anywhere. We will be talking about problems you're facing in your garden. You're listening to the Wisconsin Vegetable Gardener Radio Show, a program to help you grow better, garden, maintain your landscape, help your trees grow better, make that grass look greener, and preserving what you grow for indoor and out.
Got a question for Joey and Holly? Send it via email anytime to gardentalkradio@gmail.com.
Do your trees look sad? When we here at the Wisconsin Vegetable Gardens have a tree or shrub issue, Dr. Jim's is the product we reach for, as it is the product that works. It really provides results. Their small batch, extra potent blend of readily available nutrients is exactly what your trees, plants, and bushes need to regain their health and stay bug free. It's super easy to use. It feeds the microbes and adds new life to your soil so you can grow stronger plants. Chemical-free, environmentally responsible fertilizer that works. It will put a smile on your face and your plants. To find out more about Tree Secret and other products, visit drjims.com. That's drjims.com. The new way to support your tomatoes, wrap it and snap it, tomatosnaps.com.
Do not go anywhere. There is more of the Wisconsin Vegetable Gardener Radio Show to come. which is presented to you by Power Planter Earth Augers, the official digging tool. To find the right size for your digging project, visit powerplanter.com.
Protect your plants against damage with a 3-in-1 plant guard and special blend fertilizer. Visit ivyorganics.com. Pomona's Universal Pectin is a high-quality pectin that gels reliably with low amounts of any sweetener. If you're trying to reduce the amount of sugar in your diet, you'll love Pomona's Universal Pectin. Now you can make healthy homemade jams and jellies sweetened to your taste. You can use sugar or honey to sweeten. Pomona's Universal Pectin keeps indefinitely when stored in an airtight container. Easy to use, versatile, and comes with directions and recipes in every box. Find out more and where to buy at PomonaPectin.com. Also available at natural food stores and online.
Brought to you by Blue Ribbon Organics, providing locally made organic compost and soil blends for gardens, farms, landscaping, and more. Visit BlueRibbonOrganics.com or call 262-497-8539 to find their products nearest you.
Blue Mel's Garden and Landscape Center offers an awesome selection of high-quality garden and landscape products. We have just the plants you're looking for, annuals, perennials, veggies, herbs, and more. Plus, you can always count on us to answer all of your questions and offer expert advice. Blue Mills also carries the largest selection of bulk landscape materials in the area. Enjoy a beverage from our coffee shop while your kids run around in our huge playground. Join our growing list of highly satisfied customers. Visit the garden center that offers everything you're looking for. Visit Blue Mills today.
Blue Mills, 4930 West Loomis Road, 414-282-4220.
The Wisconsin Vegetable Gardener Radio Show is brought to you by the following: Phylum BioPro, Dr. Jim's, Nasala Kabucha, MI Greenhouse LLC, Green Gobbler, Water Hoop, Seed Savers Exchange. Find all sponsors at thewisconsinvegetablegardener.com and thank them for their support.
Now back to the Wisconsin Vegetable Gardener Radio Show, which is presented to you by Power Planter Earth Augers, the official digging tool. To find the right size for your digging project, visit powerplanter.com. Now here are your hosts, Joey and Holly Baird.
Welcome back to the Wisconsin Vegetable Gardener Radio Show. Thank you for hanging around. We're going to talk about some of the problems that you may be facing in your garden. And there's a lot of problems that people have in their garden. Some are self-inflicted. Others are natural deals that happen. Nature brings bugs in. You may have an infestation of a certain situation, and you're trying to find a humane or organic way in order to deal with that without having to spray harmful chemicals on it. So we're going to go over some of them. We posted this on our social media page a couple of weeks ago.
When you say self-inflicted, is that like where you overwater?
Overwater.
Plant stuff too close?
Right.
Okay.
Yeah, that's where, self-inflicted problems that you have unknowingly possibly caused your garden so let's talk about bugs. We've got a lot of bugs that are in our garden. And the best thing in which you can do is have a balanced ecosystem. We had Charles Malkey on last week, a biologist, who talks about it's okay to have bad bugs in the garden. However, you don't want them to overpopulate and you not have the good bugs. How do you keep a balance? Well, you do not use harmful chemicals or sometimes any chemicals, because even if you use organic chemicals, though they are organic, they are still chemicals. And some of them are non-selective, which means they kill everything that they come in contact with. So we want to be cautious about the use of those chemicals, either organic or inorganic, and inorganic meaning a synthetic product. And there are applications in which you may need to use such, because you have to control the explosion of the problem. So that it is okay if you have to use such thing, but you need to follow the directions. But good bugs, bad bugs, if you have a big problem, then you may need to look at means and controlling it to get it back in check.
So another issue that people have is watering, and that
more is good. More is better. Pour the water to it.
Right. So one thing is that you have to keep in mind, get yourself on a watering schedule. Start thinking about watering on a regular basis, just like any habit you're trying to build. Maybe not a habit, but maybe like a routine. you need to practice that routine regularly, right? So if you want to say you're like, I'm going to cook dinner three nights a week, you need to plan, you need to think about it, you need to do your thing.
Well, just like harvesting. Like I've got, I'm harvesting green beans twice a week now because if I wait once a week and harvest, then the beans are gonna get too big, the pods are gonna get too large, the seed in the pod is gonna get too mature, and the plants will shut down before I can get four or five harvest off of them, and that's the goal, because I'm getting about 3 to 4 pounds every 4 days now, and if I just let them go, then I've wasted all the time that we've put in planting them for what we're looking at. So
when
routine.
It comes, yeah, it's routine. So when it comes to watering, you think, okay, I'm going to water my garden Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. But then so Monday you water it. Tuesday night, it pours, rain, you get all this rain, whatever. Obviously, you're not going to water it Wednesday, but you thought about it. Thursday,
you got to make sure. Well, if it depending on how much rain,
right?
Yeah,
but if you get
rain
enough,
gauge from world's coolest rain gauge.com might be.
I said like a big pour.
Yeah, big pour. Yeah.
Yeah. So and then Thursday, you're not doing anything. Friday, you're like, let's water. And that's what you need. And you just get into that habit and then it doesn't become an issue. Or you have an irrigation system that you set on a timer and you set it to water 3 times a day for 5 minutes a day. And there it goes.
Definitely invest in an automatic timer. If you're going to go a timer on a water system that is self-programmable and or Wi-Fi compatible. Let's talk about tomatoes. This is the big problem a lot of people are facing this year is the dying off of the lower leaves, yellow and black and brown spots, and it's starting to progressively work up the plant. Secondly, you're starting to harvest fruit, and you find out the bottom of them is all rotten, and you're upset. And we'll start with that one first, because I see this on social media, and our what is blossom in rot and how to fix it, that video has exploded on our YouTube channel. It's a 3-minute video that explains in great detail that we'll cover here. But essentially, you're not watering.
Yeah, you're not watering consistently. So that calcium gets locked up in the plant or in the soil. The plant blossom end rot is a result of lack of calcium to the plant. So if you're not watering regularly, that calcium is getting locked up in the soil. The plant doesn't have access to it. You think, okay, I'm going to add something to my soil. And then you water it in. And then the plant has access to that calcium again. So instead of purchasing something to add calcium to your soil,
there's sprays. You spray the plant, you spray the leaves, you spray the fruit, and people get in arguments. It's just water. 99% of people's gardens have plenty of calcium. It's just too dry for the plant to pick it up.
So that's something that you want to keep in mind, and that's how you deal with the blossom end rot. That's how you deal with a lot of problems is just by consistently watering.
Yeah. And then the other problem is the progressive dying of the leaf. And leaves up the plant, killing the plant, and by the end of the season, you've got a beautiful stalk with some fruit and no leaves. This is early blight. Early blight is in everybody's soil. And no matter what you do, you're not going to get rid of it out of the soil. People, I plant every other 3 years. Yeah, you should rotate your crops, but it's always going to be in your soil. It doesn't matter how well you or what you do. So there's a couple of ways in which we can fight this.
Right. So one way is to make sure that you're trimming off the bottom few inches of your plant, anything that could possibly touch the soil now or in the close future. The other one is that
And not just right now, throughout the season.
Well, right, but yeah. I'm talking about when you're doing the trimming.
Right.
Yeah, don't start trimming, stuff you don't need to trim. Second of all, because early blight is something that lives in the soil. And there's good and bad things in everybody's soil, so that's good to keep in mind. Second of all, you can take whole grain yellow cornmeal. Has to be whole grain, has to be yellow. And you sprinkle around the base of your plants. And you can do this twice per the season when you plant and then about halfway through. And what that does is it helps, it has this beneficial fungi in it called trichoderma. It helps prevent that early blight.
So even if you've never done that, trim your bottom 6 to 8 inches up the stem and apply that whole grain cornmeal. Now, we've done presentations and talks back when we used to be able to do that. And people would come to us the next year and said, I thought you were crazy. I did that and had the best tomatoes I have ever had. And we picked
We might be crazy.
That's up for debate. And we ask that you not email us on your opinion on that. But we got that from a master gardener out of Texas about 8 years ago. And ever since then, we've had phenomenal, beautiful plants. And if you want a healthy plant and produce all the way up to frost, you got to have leaves on the plant. Otherwise, it doesn't photosynthesize and it doesn't do anything. So yeah, yellow whole grain cornmeal, fight that early blight. Mulch as well. We got to mulch to keep that soil, because that's what occurs. That soil splashing up on the leaves of the tomato plant, and that's 90% of the problems all your plants are going to face, is the splash up of soil with the bad bacteria, the good bacteria, all that stuff. So we want to mulch with something organic, preferably straw, chemical-free, seed-free grass clippings, pine needles, shredded paper, whatever the case is. People will use weed barrier, the fabric, which is fine. There is biodegradable weed barrier. However, if you're going to do such of that manner, install a drip irrigation system underneath it. That way the plants can get adequate water, and you don't, and because some of this weed barrier is too fine. I mean, the water will percolate through it, but not to the magnitude if it was exposed soil, that type of thing. And you want to cover your soil. That's always healthy, because nature doesn't leave soil exposed. Another thing, Japanese beetles. We'll touch on that at the end of this segment, but, Phylum Bioproducts, is the only natural, water dispersible spray that you can spray directly on your edible plants, to control them. People use the pheromone traps. Now, a pheromone trap emits a fragrance that attracts the Japanese beetles to your property. It attracts all the Japanese beetles in, I don't know how many square feet, yards, miles, but then your backyard becomes a nightclub for the Japanese beetles. So if you do utilize that type of control, then you would want to try to put it at the farthest distance away, in a corner or a neighbor's property.
I was nightclub dancing with the Japanese beetles.
Yeah. You know what happens after the nightclub? They die.
Oh, is that what?
Yeah, so that's,
oh,
yeah.
Sad.
Womp womp. So Phylum Bioproducts is a great way to control that. Rabbits and deers, people are having that. I'm seeing groundhogs being a more popular problem.
What's with that? What's with the groundhogs?
They're taking back the earth.
They're taking back
It's 2020.
Earth.
What's
it's
the difference?
It's 2020.
Yeah.
Like it's our time to
shine.
Yeah,
everything else has went to,
right.
Yeah. Why not? Let's just take over. You know, they had their little meeting.
Do they have a meeting with the Japanese beetles?
Might as well. Deer defeat is all natural. It's for deer, a rabbit, and groundhog repellent. You spray it on the plant, and you can spray it directly on your edible plants. There's some rules, there's some instructions to follow. However, it will last for 30 days through rain, snow, freeze, and you can, it stinks for about 30 minutes to the humans, but it will stay, it has an odor for the animals that humans can't detect, for that duration. And if you want to, get deer defeat, you can certainly do that, and you use coupon code radio at checkout and save 10% on your purchase. It really does work. We get emails that say, thanks for the suggestion. I didn't think it would work, but it really, really does work. So we only recommend and have companies that sponsor us that are not gimmick. That's a
right.
Big thing for us when it comes to promoting the program. Obviously, sponsorship is what pays to allow us to be on all the stations that we're on, but we have a reputation. We can't buy that. So we want to promote products that truly do work, that it's worth your hard-earned dollars. Another thing with squirrels, chili powder. A lot of squirrels get into bird feeders or on plants.
Another thing is, if you have that bird feeder on a pole of some sort and
right.
The squirrels are crawling up it, you just take some cooking oil and you just rub the cooking oil on there, and they cannot climb up that then.
Well, if the cooking oil doesn't work, you can go to like a health store and go next to the condominiums, and they have lubrication that you can smear on the poles.
The condominiums?
Yeah. It's a family show.
Oh, okay.
Keeping it clean. and that stuff, you know, you can lube up the pole, and they're not going to be able to climb up that. But chili powder, you mix that in with your bird feed, and they will not bother that anymore. The birds can't taste that heat of the chili powder, but you do have to reapply this if it does rain and when it does rain, do that again. If you're not getting enough water on your carrots, they're going to go to seed this year. Carrots are biennials. Some of you are facing that problem that not enough hydration, and they'll go to seed. Carrots, onions, leeks, broccoli, cauliflower, kale are all biennials. There's other ones. But if they are stressed enough, they will put seed on. I've got beets on the porch that we didn't keep watered that are going to seed because their job is to reproduce. And if they're not going to make it to the next year, they got to do it this year. So that's what's occurring if your biennials are going to seed this year. It's they're thinking it's the second year of growth, and they're doing all they can in order to produce the seed for the next generation. So that's just some of the problems that you're maybe facing. If you're facing a problem in your garden and you're not really sure how to go about tackling that particular problem, you can certainly get a hold of us by giving us a call at 1-800-927-SHOW, 1-800-927-SHOW, or you can give us an you can send us an email at gardentalkradio@gmail.com. And you can either greatly describe it or attach a couple pictures to it, and we can certainly help diagnose and guide you in the direction. And if you need a product, we'll certainly recommend one that we use. Or if you can do it naturally out of things in your kitchen, we can do that as well and help you out in order to for your garden to be successful. We're talking about the Japanese beetles, and Phylum Bioproducts has the product for you. Japanese beetles are out and about. The summer is here. It's hot in all parts of the country. And various weevils, beetles, borers, and those Japanese beetles in which we talked about are wreaking havoc on the produce and the flowers that you're trying to grow.
And what better way to prevent these pests from destroying your garden than by controlling them while they are larvae? Grub Gone is an easy-to-apply granular product that can be spread on your turf successfully to control grub invaders. Developed by Phylum Bioproducts from a naturally occurring bacteria, Grub Gone is a non-chemical BT product that specifically targets only scarab pests. It is safe to use around bees and other beneficial insects.
Yes, if you're already, and we do as well, have those Japanese beetles in your yard, your flowers, your garden, Beetle Gone is the only water dispersible powder that can be sprayed directly on your edible plants. To find out where to purchase, go to phylumbioproducts.com and find out more about the products in which they have available. That's Phylum Bioproducts.com. Do not go anywhere. When we come back, author Karen Chapman will be with us. You're listening to the Wisconsin Vegetable Gardener Radio Show.
You can bet the Wisconsin Vegetable Gardener's phone lines are always jammed during the show. So Joey and Holly keep their phone lines open 24-7 to help you. Call anytime 24-7. Just dial 1-800-927-7469. Or just remember, 1-800-927-SHOW, S-H-O-W. Leave a message and they will call you back.
Planting conditions are always favorable with the Power Planter Earth Auger. No matter what the job is, Power Planter has the right size for you. Simply attach to a drill and let the Power Planter do the work for you, creating holes fast and efficiently with ease. Find the size that fits your project at powerplanter.com. For all your indoor growing needs, equipment, and supplies, it's wegrowindoors.com. The number one key to healthy, productive plants are the roots. Starting from seed to full-grown plants, RootMaker.com has the answer. From seed starting trays with an innovative design that air prunes the roots, creating a fabulous root system, never again will you have root-bound plants. To multiple gallon grow bag sizes to raised beds, RootMaker.com has your grow needs covered. Visit RootMaker.com. Use coupon code TWVG at checkout and get 10% off your entire order.
Do not go anywhere. There is more of the Wisconsin Vegetable Gardener Radio Show to come, which is presented to you by Power Planter Earth Augers, the official digging tool. To find the right size for your digging project, visit powerplanter.com.
TrimBin turns any chair into a workstation. Comfortably sort your herbs, dried flowers, cannabis, and more. Easily collect pollen with a static brush and mirror finish collection tray. High walls keep your work contained. To get yours, visit harvest-more.com. Made in California.
The Wisconsin Vegetable Gardener Radio Show is brought to you by the following: Power Planter Earth Augers, Ivy Organics, Root Maker, Pomona Universal Pectin, Chapin Manufacturing Incorporated, Pro Plugger, Tomato Snaps, World's Coolest Floating Rain Gauge. Find all sponsors at thewisconsinvegetablegardener.com and thank them for their support. Bluemel's Landscape and Garden Center selected by the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel as the top landscaper in 2020. That means that they do the landscaping that you want them to do on your property. They will follow your guidelines. They'll follow your plan. They'll suggest some things along the way, but they want you to be happy. When they walk away from a project, they want you to be happy with the results in which they have given to you for your property and your backyard, whatever the case is. They can also provide you bulk material. They have that available, 40 items, most selection anywhere in the area, as well as plants and a knowledgeable staff. Blue Mel's Landscape and Garden Center at 4930 West Loomis Road, just off of Layton in Greenfield. You can give them a call at 414-282-4220 and check them out at bluemels.com.
Now back to the Wisconsin Vegetable Gardener Radio Show, which is presented to you by Power Planter Earth Augers, the official digging tool. To find the right size for your digging project, visit powerplanter.com. Now here are your hosts, Joey and Holly Baird.
Welcome back to the Wisconsin Vegetable Gardener Radio Show. We'll go to the hotline and bring on our guest this week. Karen Chapman of La Jardinée is a lifelong gardener. She is also an author, speaker, landscape designer, instructor, and writer. She has contributed to a number of garden publications. As a horticulturist, she helps others solve many of their garden problems. We want to welcome you to the program today, Karen.
Thank you so much. Lovely to be with you, Jerry.
Well, glad that you've taken time out of your very busy schedule to not only join myself, but all of our listeners across the country to try to help us with some of the garden problems that we face every day, not necessarily in our vegetable garden, but on our landscape in general.
My pleasure.
So let's say someone has just moved into a new house and they've got landscaping design that they want to incorporate into their new property. Why would you find it to be wise or suggest to them to hire a landscape designer versus just looking at some pictures online and then going at it themselves?
Sure. Well, you know, typically a designer is going to be a trained horticulturalist with extensive hands-on plant knowledge. They should also be an artistic visionary, and we tend to see the possibilities where the homeowners just see the problems. But I think one of the most interesting things is that designers can see in three dimensions, four seasons, and 360 degrees all at once, which means when we have to balance scale and proportion, we can see that big picture. And that's just something that comes with decades of experience. It's incredibly hard for a homeowner to grasp all of that and then select plants which are appropriate to their space. So we take the guesswork out and make them successful.
Well, and like you said, years of experience, you can see problems many steps before a typical homeowner would see it, and a homeowner is not going to see it until it's already happened. And, you know, that's a key to anything. You want to get somebody to pay a little bit up front to make sure the job is done correct, right, and you actually have somebody that knows what they're doing besides, oh, I'll save a couple of dollars and do it myself. And usually it doesn't end up as well as you'd hoped.
No, I get called out so often to help homeowners who've done exactly that. They've done their best, but they usually end up with this jelly bean garden, you know, one of these and one of those, just in some kind of hodgepodge instead of a cohesive design. I'd say the other thing that designers can do is actually help families or couples discuss their invariably very different wish lists, although I do make the point of saying that I charge extra for marriage counseling. You know, you have a little bit of negotiation to do there as well.
Absolutely. Well, let's talk about your book, Deer Resistant Design. It is very helpful. What is deer resistant? What is a deer resistant design? What is it not? I think that's a key part of this question. And what is a great tip in which you would be willing to share with all of us that's in that book?
Sure. I was excited to write this book because trust me, I needed the book. That's why it got written. You know, deer resistant design is one that thrives despite the presence of deer, but without resorting to fences. It's not a prison, and it isn't damage-free. That's something, you know, let's get people's expectations in the right place. A deer-resistant design is not going to be damage-free, but the damage is reduced, it's hidden, or it's distracted from by some clever design tricks and wise planting choices. And those planting choices, it's not just the actual type of plants. It's also exactly where they are planted and how they are combined together. All of that helps to create a successful deer-resistant design. But I'd say a key tip is actually perhaps one you may not expect, because it's got nothing whatsoever to do. Here's the premise. There are masters and mistresses at creating chaos. So anything we can do to instill a sense of order puts us on the winning streak. So this is where I advise clients, you know what, invest in the hardscape. And that's everything which isn't the plant. It's the patio, the pathways, the pergola. The deer can't eat those. They can't knock them over. They can't damage them. So every dollar that you spend on those items is a really good financial investment. But it's also something which instills a sense of order and discipline to the space, which immediately makes it look as if you're in control and not the deer.
Reverse the psychologist kind of reversal there on the deer. When you talk about incorporating plants in there, are you kind of talking about ones that you know deer will eat, but put them in the center around plants that are less desirable that the deer may not go after?
Not really. I mean, my starting point is what we all call the Rutgers list. It's that website on the Rutgers website which lists deer-resistant plants. But it's not a black or white, you know, they are or they are not deer-resistant. There's a gradation. There's actually four levels of deer-resistance, A through D. And we always choose those which are A and B on that list. So we choose those which seldom or very rarely receive major damage, and that is our primary palette. If a homeowner is determined to grow a rose, then I'll persuade them to grow a climbing rose over an 8 to 10 foot tall pergola, so that even if the deer nibble the lower blooms, they can't reach the main display, which is out of their range.
Got it. Well, let's talk about landscape design here. When many people choose a focal point, and I think that's important when you do a landscape, you need something where your eye goes to it. Many people may choose a tree or a shrub. Why is this often not the best ideal? And what's a better alternative than just dropping a shrub or a tree in that focal point where the homeowner thinks is the best spot?
Right. And, you know, a beautiful specimen tree, such as a paper bark maple or something else, can be fantastic if you don't have deer. But if we're still specifically talking about, you know, if you've got deer as a problem, deer can't eat anything. And at some point, they're likely to test most things. So for a focal point, particularly in environments where deer are present, I choose something that the deer can't possibly eat or knock over. So it might be a beautiful sculptural container, maybe a piece of garden art. It could be a structure. In my garden, I actually have a little cabin. We have archways. You know, all of these can become beautiful focal points. A water feature is another one, and it can be something as inexpensive as a bird bath, or it can be, you know, a gushing waterfall. But these are the focal points that the deer can't damage, and using specimen trees as secondary levels of interest is fine, but don't rely on them if you have to share your garden with deer.
Now, you brought up the word container. A lot of people have containers for ornamental and edible plants. When somebody wants to grow an ornamental container, whether they're on a fifth floor balcony apartment in New York or where, or on their patio porch or deck, which is better to go after, finding the container first or the plant first? And is there a preferred method of the madness? And which would you consider choosing first, the container or the plant?
That's a great question. And I wish more people actually did consider this before they just hit the nurseries. The container is a key element of the design because it's often going to dictate both the style and the scale of the finished design. So it's really wise to choose that first. And it also means when you go shopping for plants, you know exactly how many you're going to need to fill it. You've already got that dimension taken care of. But when you're actually then at the nursery, it's so easy to be overwhelmed by the choices. So some of the key decisions you're going to have to make are material. You know, what are you going to use for material? You have much colder winters in Wisconsin than we do here in Seattle. So basically, for instance, high-fire ceramic pots. You may prefer instead to go with something which is a synthetic and is lighter, or something, if you know that you have to move it in the winter, you don't want a really heavy pot. You want something which is more manageable that you can put it into the garage, perhaps. The flip side of that is if you're in a windy location and having a lightweight pot may not be such a good idea. So you've got some decisions to make and some considerations in terms of the material. But the next biggest one is thinking about the size, because when you go into the nursery, you're going to see most pots are about 18 inches tall. And that purely because the people that work in the nurseries, and I was one of them, know that you can physically take that home, even planted, put it in your car, and you're good to go. That doesn't mean it's the right size pot to have at your front door. So if you think about standing at the entranceway to your home, you're going to be viewing any container garden on that porch from a standing position. You don't want to trip over the pot. You want to be at eye level to the planting. So that pot is going to be much taller than one that you might have adjacent to a chair in on the patio, perhaps. That's more likely to be at sitting height, which would be a 17, 18-inch height, with the plants then coming above that. So be consideration of that. And then in terms of style and color, that again is going to be driven by what's your design preference. If you want something in contemporary, perhaps you'd be looking for a sleek gray container. If you want something more whimsical, maybe a whiskey barrel or a pair of old hiking boots.
Well, doing the container first, and that gives you a little more self-control, because you're, like you said, you're not buying a dozen and a half plants for a place that only can, that you can really realistically grow four. And then you got to figure out what you've done with these other ones. And you probably spent money and they're going to die because you ain't got nowhere to put them.
Yes. And then you'll do the inevitable walk around the garden with plants in hand, trying to decide where it is you're going to put them. Yes. I've seen a lot of people do that.
Absolutely. Well, many people are spending a lot of time at home now, whether they want to or not. And they realize they may need some type of separation between neighbors. Now, whether this be you may need a foliage screen, or perhaps to protect from the neighbors seeing what's going on in your backyard, and a fence isn't a desirable choice. What can we plant in most areas of the country now versus spring to help us develop that perimeter and barrier to keep neighbors' eyes off of what we're doing, or just give us a little privacy?
Absolutely. Yeah, it's been really interesting as homeowners, as you say, are now home during the times of day when perhaps they weren't previously. There is definitely an increased sense of a need for a private oasis. But honestly, you know, we are now in midsummer, and so I would not personally recommend planting major screening trees at this point in the year unless you've got a professionally designed irrigation system and are really sure you can keep it watered. I will give you and your listeners a tip. If you desperately have to get a tree in the ground right now, here's what I do, and I've been 100% successful with this. When I dig the hole for the tree, I dig it wider than I need, and alongside the tree, I insert sections of irrigation pipe, and that's that 4 to 6 inch diameter metal pipe, which has got holes in it. And I space the holes so that they're facing the trunk of the tree. So they're right down in the planting hole at the same level of the bottom of the root ball, and they protrude above the soil level about 2 inches. You then backfill as usual, and when it comes time to water, you pour water directly down those irrigation pipes so the water goes straight down to where the roots are. If you try just standing there with a hose pipe and water a big bald and burlap tree that you've just planted, it is incredibly difficult to get the water to saturate down deep enough, and even harder to know if you've got it right. So if that's something you have to do, then do that. But in terms of screening, you know, I would challenge folks to think beyond the ubiquitous hedge. You know, arborvitae, they're as common with you as they are with us, and they're probably the most boring plant material on earth. You know, why not mix it up a bit? This is a great time for listeners to assess, do I really need evergreen screening year round, or is it just a problem in summer? Do I need it at a 6 foot height, or actually is my problem really up to 20 feet tall because it's a second story looking down on me? Then you can start to do some layering. You can intersperse things like columnar junipers or the arborvitae, perhaps with broadleaf plants such as privet. You can layer into that columnar deciduous trees like the Armstrong maple, which is fabulous. And then layer in front of that beautiful, colorful spirea or wigella or ninebark, so that you end up with this beautiful layered garden that really wraps itself around you, rather than creating something like the arborvitae, which can very quickly look like prison bars around the perimeter of a property. That really isn't a good look.
Well, and you bring up a very important aspect of it, the watering portion, not even just for a tree, but even in these ornamental containers in the front of your house. If they're dry, a little water is not going to fix it. You've got to saturate the soil. You would be, people are amazed of how much water it takes to actually rehydrate soil that has completely dried out. A gallon or two is not going to fix the problem. You've got to really work at it to get that soil back where it is actually healthy for the plant.
That's right. And with container gardens, I always advise people to water slowly and steadily. Put it on a shower setting. You're not trying to jet wash them. Put on a shower setting. Do it slowly until the water runs out of the drainage holes at the bottom, because the roots aren't going to grow where the soil is dry. The roots want that moisture, so they need the full volume of that pot filled with moist potting mix for them to grow into that.
And if possible, use some kind of natural mulch on around the plants as well.
Absolutely. Even compost is going to be a great addition for that.
Well, Karen, a lot of great information we've packed into a very short period of time. How can people find more about you? How can they get a hold of your books?
My website is thejardinerdesigns.com, and that's going to take you to my blog, event listings, all my books, newsletter. You'll find out about online courses, garden tours I lead, and a whole load more. Le Jardiner is also on Facebook. And to be honest, if you just type in Karen Chapman, garden designer, you'll find about the first 70 hits are me. So I'm pretty easy to find.
A lot of good information, and now's the time that people kind of need to evaluate what their goals are, because as we're in 2020 and beyond, things may not change as much as we hope they to be, and we may be home more than we're not.
Yeah, that's very true.
Well, thank you very much, Karen. We greatly appreciate you offering your time not only to us but our listeners across the country.
My pleasure. Take care.
Got a question for Joey and Holly? Send it via email anytime to gardentalkradio@gmail.com.
WorldCoolestRainGauge.com. Need I say more?
Do not go anywhere. There is more of the Wisconsin Vegetable Gardener Radio Show to come, which is presented to you by Power Planter Earth Augers, the official digging tool. To find the right size for your digging project, visit powerplanter.com.
Looking to kill weeds without using dangerous chemicals like glyphosate? An all-natural weed killer may be just what you're looking for. Green Gobbler's Vinegar Weed Killer is a concentrated herbicide derived naturally from corn. It's 4 times stronger than regular table vinegar, so it packs a punch against all kinds of pesky weeds. Use Green Gobbler's Vinegar Weed Killer to safely kill dandelions, crabgrass, clover, ivy, and more. It's perfect for driveways, pavers, fence lines, and other outdoor surfaces. Green Gobbler Vinegar Weed Killer is an effective and powerful herbicide, but it doesn't stop there. It's also certified for organic use, so when used properly, it won't negatively affect soil or wildlife. Since Green Gobbler's Vinegar Weed Killer is pure vinegar with no other additives, pet owners can let their pets out to play right after application. Search for Green Gobbler Vinegar Weed Killer on Amazon.com today. We offer a hassle-free money-back guarantee, so you have nothing to lose.
When it comes to bulk landscaping materials, Blue Mel's Garden and Landscape Center is where everyone goes. Whatever the project, we have the materials you need with over 40 varieties to choose from. Soils, mulches, gravels, decorative stones, fresh cut sod. Blue Mel's has these products in stock and ready for easy pickup or fast delivery. So what are you waiting for? Now is the time to get your yard back into shape. Stop in and pick these materials up or call us for delivery today. Nobody does bulk landscaping materials better than Blue Mel's Garden and Landscape Center.
Blue Mel's, 4930 West Loomis Road, 414-282-4220.
The Wisconsin Vegetable Gardener Radio Show is brought to you by the following: Neptune Harvest, Happy Leaf LED, DripWorks, We Grow Indoors, Deer Defeat, Harvest More, Blue Ribbon Organics, Blue Mel's Landscape and Garden Center, Chip Drop. Find all sponsors at thewisconsinvegetablegardener.com and thank them for their support.
Now back to the Wisconsin Vegetable Gardener Radio Show, which is presented to you by Power Planter Earth Augers, the official digging tool. To find the right size for your digging project, visit powerplanter.com. Now here are your hosts, Joey and Holly Baird.
Welcome back to the Wisconsin Vegetable Gardener Radio Show. You've got a question, we've got an answer. You can get a hold of us a couple of ways. Send your question via email to gardentalkradio@gmail.com. That's gardentalkradio@gmail.com. We'd love to hear from you, even just saying, letting us know where you're listening to the show from. And if you'd like to get a hold of us, you can do that toll-free nationwide, 1-800-927-SHOW. That's 1-800-927-SHOW. Had a number of questions come in this week. We'll see what we can get through to the now to the top of the hour. First question here, Holly. Why are my zucchini flowers not opening?
Well, this can be a sign of stress. Sometimes it happens when you have the squash vine borer. And so what the squash vine borer is it finds the base of your squash plant, typically early June. And then what it does is it lays their larva into the
burrows.
Burrows in the stem of the plant. Lays that larva. The larva eats the middle section of your plant. All of a sudden, sometimes you have like these nice looking zucchinis. And then the next day they're just dead.
It's flat on the ground.
So
you want to be vigilant on that. But what the flower situation here is can be common. The plant may not be old enough.
Right. So, yeah, it might not be mature enough yet. So that's something to keep in mind. They are huge plants. They take up space. So make sure you are spacing them apart properly.
And sometimes based on your climatic conditions, the flowers open and close before you actually know that they've done it. So that can also be a situation there. Next question here. What do you do with the soil after you harvest your crops from the grow bags?
So, we take the half of the whatever's in there,
mm-hmm.
and we can throw it in our compost pile,
top off the beds,
whatever, fill whatever, and then we replenish it in the spring with new stuff.
Now, that's part of the answer, and that's the right answer. However, it's based on the size of the container in which you're growing in as well. If we're with the 60-gallon grow bags we've got from rootmaker.com, we just top them off. We continue to top them off. The soil, you know, depletes and we top them off. If you're in a 1, 3, 5, 10-gallon, 15-gallon grow bag, it's probably best to just remove all that soil and start over. Again, if you're wanting a grow bag or a raised bed, rootmaker.com is the place to go. You can find that information and purchase anything and use coupon code TWVG at checkout.
Okay. So another question is can I freeze seeds to make them last longer, to keep them longer?
Great question. And yes, you can. I'll explain. Many people will keep them in the crisper of their fridge in a mason jar with a lid on it to keep them cool and dry. But freezing seeds does not harm them. It can actually greatly extend the lifespan of those seeds if done properly. Now, if done properly, all seed banks throughout the world freeze their seeds intending to for the longevity of the storage. Now, humidity is the greatest concern when it comes to your seeds. If there's too much humidity, it can damage them with the freezing. And a blast of warm, humid air also can damage them. But frozen seeds can be damaged with that. But freezing them, just wrap them up in a envelope and something they can breathe in. Now, I wouldn't recommend putting them in like a plastic bag or something, but freezing them works very well.
Okay. And so here's another question. I just bought a house. I'm working with my gardens, adjusting certain plants. There is an amazing mess of asparagus. However, it's
good
insanely,
problem to have.
Right? It's insanely overgrown and in a location that needs to be moved. I understand a pitchfork is needed or a garden fork, but does it need to wait till fall to move it? And where can I move it to? Can I move it to a partially shaded area?
Well, asparagus can grow in partial shade. Best if you can grow it in full sun, but obviously you've got a great problem that you're dealing with to have an abundance of already mature asparagus. Now, you would want to wait until fall. The fronds are growing right now and building the root system on your asparagus. You would want to remove, at the end of the season, you can cut those fronds back, compost them, and then you can dig up your asparagus and then transplant it so it can get in the ground and kind of establish slightly before spring. You might see a decrease in the amount of production they do next year, but after that, they should be just fine. All right, we got time for a few more here.
Last year, I had pears that had brown scab-like areas on them. What might that be, and how do I, or what do I fix it with?
Well, there's a couple of things. That is called pear scab or apple scab. And
it's caused by spores, unfortunately, airborne spores. And then it creates these velvety spots, lesions.
Velvety spots is a glamorous term. It creates a terrible scab on the... Yeah.
Well, you know, we need to paint a pretty picture here.
Oh, okay.
Okay. And it can encourage cracking of the skin as well. So what you can do is you can so this lives in diseased plant material. So in the fall, you want to make sure that you're not letting diseased plant material just chill next to your tree.
I wouldn't put it in the compost pile. I know some people say, yeah, throw it in the compost pile. But unless your compost pile gets warm enough, and here's the other problem, if it gets too warm and stays too warm over the winter, it can harbor and keep those spores alive.
Right. So so that's what you want to do. Is the biggest thing is just remove that diseased foliage that has fallen. So whether it be the leaves, other fruit, what have you, move it away from the tree, put it in the trash, put it out to the curb for the trash man to get, whatever. I would put it in bags so that a chance of the spores doesn't occur anymore.
And the other thing in which you can do is there is an organic means of controls to do this, and there's also chemical means of control to do this. So it would depend on where your particular situation is, and controlling the pear scab with a fungicide spray, you need to apply it 2 to 5 times during the season, depending on where the tree is growing. The more important portion of this spray is done when the flowering is in the pink stage, or becomes pink right before the fruit begins to develop, usually about 10 to 14 days by succession spraying the tree here. So there's a lime sulfur spray you can apply. There's a chemical spray you can apply. Typically, you want to do this around February or March, and that can help prevent the spore activity. However, that's not a guaranteed cure for that problem. Just because you've done it doesn't mean it will fix itself. Now, if you got the pears and it's already, you know, you didn't spray, or you did spray and you still have the problem, you can eat the pears. You just want to peel them. If they are very badly infected and cracked and become misshapen, because of that scabbing, you just throw them away. Don't even compost them. I wouldn't compost them, because then you can keep the whole thing alive and the whole evil cycle going again. Well, we are out of time, and we certainly appreciate yours. Miss any portion of this program or want to revisit in its entirety, you can do that by going to our website, thewisconsinvegetablegardener.com, and clicking on the Season 4 tab at the top of the page. You can also get highlights of segments and guests on the right-hand side where it says highlights. If you missed any portion of this show, you can revisit it. And you can also, if you don't want to do that, you can send us an email at gardentalkradio@gmail.com, and we'll send you the link to this program. You can also check out past shows and videos on our website. Tell your garden friends and your fellow gardeners and neighbors our show's on the air. That's how our program gets heard. You can also send us an email. Let us know where you're listening from. Join us next week on the program. We're going to talk about the importance of bats, as well as our guest, Rose Hayden-Smith, will be with us, and will answer your garden questions. So until next week, for
Holly Baird,
I'm Joey Baird, and we will see you in the garden.